This is the Media Freak Podcast. It's the latest and greatest podcast created by media people who are just a little bit freaky. We're not the big dogs. We're the ones in the media trenches who tell you how it really is. Each episode, you'll hear from us with a roundup of media news, our expert guests, and some anonymous sources about the freaky world of media. So who's on the mic? It's me, your host, Harriet from Smartly, Buki from Coffee Cup.
What up?
Charlie from Show Heroes.
Hello.
And we're delighted to have a very special guest appearance. It's Baronje Maguire, Global Digital Lead at Publicis Media. Whoop, whoop.
Woo! Hey everyone. Happy to be here.
Very, very good. Well, we're so pleased you are here. We know that you've obviously worked on some of the group's largest global accounts across a multitude of sectors, and you really are a true expert in your field, aren't you?
I try to be, yes. Thank you very much. Yes, well, as much as possible.
You are, and I know that some would refer to you as the woman who gets shit done.
Oh, yes. That's high praise.
That's a description. Thank you. But yes. Or the other one is, when there is a challenge, just call me and I'll be there. But yeah.
Wow. There we go.
Even better.
That's the PG version. Well, anyway, before we get into today's hot topics, we must address a few exciting updates of the freaks. So it would be wrong of me not to talk about our new gigs. Whoop whoop. So, Buki, a huge congratulations to you. You've joined Coffee Cup, right?
Yes, I have.
And what do Coffee Cup do?
So we are a digital production studio specializing in games and immersive experiences. So very, very vibey. It's a little bit adjacent to previous roles and stuff, but I think where the lines are blurring so much, we're all in the same boat. So, but yeah, literally loving it. Great vibes, good energy, amazing.
Very good. Well, congrats.
Thank you. And I guess congrats are also in order for you.
Thank you very much. Yes, I've also taken the leap out of the agency world and into the world of ad tech at Smartly. So I'm just figuring out what the hell I'm doing there. And hopefully it all goes okay.
Oh, you'll be amazing. You'll smash that.
Well, let's see. But yes, all very good, all very good. And most importantly, we also want to officially pass on our congratulations to our wonderful co-host Jack and his partner Emma, who have become parents. Woo!
Woo!
Congratulations. So cute.
Yeah, amazing news. Yeah, well, we won't see Jack for a while, given that he'll be, dealing with nappies. So,
congrats.
No, basically not. So big congrats, Jack, and we look forward to meeting the arrival at some point. Anyway, in today's episode, we discuss the new kids on the block on Amazon's DSP, the latest publisher pushbacks against Google, and who might be lining up to buy Dentsu. So let's get into it. So in tech giant news, Google is being sued again, this time over showing AI-generated summaries in search results from publisher content. So US publisher Penske Media, also known as PMC, who owns Rolling Stones, Variety, and The Hollywood Reporter, among other titles, is not really very happy with Google's monopolistic approach to doing business. So in short, the AI summaries used by Google reduce the number of clicks and referrals publishers will get from Google search, which obviously in turn means less ad revenue for the publishers. And the lawsuit claims that Google is using its dominance to extend control over publisher content in the wrong way, really. Now, in episode 16, we talked a lot about how publishers and traditional ad models are under a lot of pressure. And this lawsuit feels like a prime example of that, really. So my questions for you guys are, should we expect to see more publishers push back against Google as it ultimately continues to extract more value from their content? Buki, I'm going to put that one to you first.
There is furious nodding for anyone who can't see all of us on the pod, because, yeah, I think we can probably all say that I think we should not only expect to see, but we should demand a little bit to see. I think there is so much control that kind of Google has, and I think there is so much that they extend to us, but it only kind of works if there's value on both sides. And now we're entering a very dangerous area. And I think, let's say Google were to win this, I think it sets a very dangerous precedent for other publishers, because yeah, we're getting into a place that we won't be able to get back from if we continue to just let, you know, some of the tech giants just do what they want. So yeah, and like, you know, I kind of hope Penske win, if I'm going to be honest. I love what they do. I don't know if you guys have come across them before, but you know, I've worked with them. I've met with them quite a few times, and they have their own Formula E team. I've pitched a couple of clients to try and, you know, get in through culture and then use their network of publications as well. It's an amazing kind of play. And so when you get into this space where, you know, they're not getting any clicks, they're not getting traffic because everything's being summarized on an AI page. Tough times.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, we will see more in the future, but there is existing other publishers, sort of the Independent Publisher Alliance, I think it's called, isn't it? They had their fielded an antitrust. There was an antitrust lawsuit on their behalf fielded in, actually, I think it was in July. And you've also got the New York Times, who were battling OpenAI and Microsoft. So there's, you know, there's billions and billions of potential losses here, and publishers really do have to stand up and fight for one another. And one of the interesting ways they're doing that is not just through lawsuits, but actually through deals. So there was Anthropic, which make another of the AIs. They had a settlement with some authors, but there are other companies, and I think we spoke about it before, who are going to start charging for AI companies to search their website. So it keeps the content valuable. They can still make money, and the AI can train all their models. But yeah, we really have to do something, because you don't want to get to this sort of the dead internet theory where that nothing exists, or AI creates the content, AI scrapes the content, AI delivers the content, yet nothing actually real exists.
Yeah, so we're obviously touching on the kind of broader implications, and with that considered, what do you think they are for the overall advertising ecosystem if these summaries, obviously produced by AI, just start to reduce the role of publishers more and more? B, do you have a point of view on that one?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it just brings us back to actually ethics in AI, because basically what we've been letting it do, the way AI has been built and the way it has learned, is ultimately to kind of scrap all of the content that it can see, to kind of form an opinion. That's just what it does. So far, it has been done for free, but it's kind of like taking everyone's kind of content without really any rights kind of put behind. So I think what's very interesting is, by the fighting back, we're actually getting closer to kind of all those guardrails that needs to kind of be put in. Yes, for publishers, but I think it also kind of goes for everything else as well. Like, if we have like content podcasts or anything like that, it's also important for them not to kind of be able to kind of take all of this for free. So I think whilst the big ones are actually getting into the lawsuits, it's also to kind of protect the small ones. So I like the precedent that it's actually bringing. And if I'm being honest, I'm ready to kind of be behind them. So there we go.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go for the revolution. Let's go.
Yes, I'm about it. That's what I'm saying. I want them to win. And I think when I was thinking about what happens if Google win, in my mind, like, you know, we don't strike in our industry. It's not our kind of thing. People don't think of us as necessities. But I'm like, right, all the publishers, we go on strike. We say, right, we're not letting you have any of the content. And now what are you feeding your AI? What are you doing then? And then we have to start again. But, you know, uprising.
I think what I saw as well, I can't remember what publishing group it was now, but they've like diversified their you know, their sources of revenue, and I think we've seen for quite some time people offering like subscription models to get on their pages and stuff, which is obviously one way that they can make money. The argument against that is that, yeah, but Google aren't sending them to those places. But things like subscriptions to their newsletters and Substacks and selling their own data, and you never know, maybe we get back to the old school days of, you know, Auto Trader selling their adverts direct to cars, and just cut out the millions of middlemen?
Do you know what's actually really interesting about this, because it's kind of like a back to the old but with a little bit of the new. We're all curating these really mini kind of media ecosystems for ourselves. And before, we'd go to Instagram and then it'd just tell you your feed, or you'd go into Google and it would tell you what you want. But now we are like, no, I want to have a few Substacks over there, and I'm going to have a few of those newsletters over here. And then they're very personalized, but they're, because they're one-to-one and they're content-based as opposed to like behavioral or like programmatically bought sometimes, we are heading where that there is a place for that, I think.
I like the strike idea. I think Buki should lead the charge on that one.
What, you just want me on the front line, cannon fodder?
Yeah. I'd love it. I'd love it. Well, anyway, moving on. In the CTV landscape, in episode 13, we spoke about the partnership between Disney and Amazon that allowed advertisers using Amazon's DSP to buy inventory across the premium Disney ecosystem. Now, since then, Amazon Ads has also integrated Roku's CTV industry. Notes that I really pronounced Roku, seeing as the last time I spoke about it, I pronounced it Roku. And more recently, Netflix. So Netflix ad inventory will be available to buy through Amazon's DSP in Q4 of this year, and that will be across multiple EU markets, including the UK, Germany, and also the US. Now, this news, of course, tells us a lot more about Amazon's strategy in the CTV buying space, and I'm interested to hear from you as to how you think it might influence the kind of competitive balance between Amazon and other DSPs like the Trade Desk or DV360. Buki, I'm going to give that to you first, seeing as I know you've done some revision.
I've done loads of revision. There's a couple of things I think on this one. I don't think, in answer to your that specific question, I don't think that this type of deal is what's going to push Amazon DSP, push their market share up against the heavy hitters like DV360 and Trade Desk. I think that there's too much to be, there's a little bit more to be done behind the scenes. So firstly, shout out Jack Benjamin's piece and his analysis in The Media Leader. So if anyone wants to just see the pros of this for both companies, go check that out. We'll put it in the show notes. But from like being on the ground and speaking with people who try to use this, two things are really true. Netflix's ads have been hard to buy, but Amazon DSP is kind of hard to use. And I think that is one of the things that is stopping planners and buyers from real adoption. So I think there's places where it's been mandated a little bit. But when DV360 and the Trade Desk is easy to use and you're a planner and actually there's not that many people being replaced on teams and it's actually, you're getting very time poor, I'm not going to spend all my time trying to work out Amazon DSP. I'm going to use the one that can get me my YouTube buys and other programmatic buys as quickly as possible, because I'm a one-man band at that point. So whilst I do think this is really good, I think just a little bit of that user experience and that UX in the back end is what's going to really turn the tide and push Amazon DSP market share up. That's just my thought.
That's interesting. I mean, one of the, on the kind of flip side of it, right, is that this now gives Amazon a really, really strong, and Netflix a really, really strong ability to tie together that sort of full funnel, putting the big Netflix audience and tying that in with Amazon's data and the shopping data and the trillions and trillions of data points that they've got at hand. And I mean, it's, in looking at this sort of the market, the Trade Desk are super good at what they do, right? They're like that sort of premium level of CTV access is really strong. The reality is it's also quite a bit more expensive than Amazon's. So when we're looking at the sort of pain points, and Buki, you raise a really good point there, right? Is that if something's hard to use, then obviously that adds friction. But when it's, I don't know the exact details, half the margin they take off it or whatever it is, and that's a serious consideration for the people above who are going to then influence the people doing all the button turning. But it gives a massive, massive, massive scale now. Huge, you know, it's what, 94-odd million ad subscribers in Netflix, and they're planning to grow that super aggressively. I mean, probably the numbers that they've quoted are maybe a little bit optimistic, but they've got to go to market with them. I think it gives them an edge against the Trade Desk there. And obviously DV360 are huge yes, they're more reliant on YouTube, CTV, but I still, yeah, it'll be an interesting one. One of the other bits we've got to remember is that they're playing a secondary game here to the streaming wars, because it's the real game is who wins the streaming wars, because that's where all the eyeballs are and that's where all the ad revenue is going. So it's an interesting like two layer game that's going on. You've got streamers fighting out, DSPs fighting underneath.
Well, that's kind of what I'm at though. That's in theory, everything you said is bang on. But I remember when Amazon ad server essentially bought the Seismic ad server. I don't know if you guys remember Seismic.
Yeah, I remember Seismic.
Thank you, B. Thank you very much. Seismic ad server. So I remember booking bear campaigns with those guys, and I would never ever book the self-serve because it was so difficult to use. But they had the proper people who could do it. And actually, all the campaigns used to fly, but only when it was done managed service. But now they've almost taken the functionality, made it self-serve, and said, go on, planners, you guys do it. And now what their Amazon DSP, I know it works together with the Amazon ad server, but it's plateaued around 20% market share. It hasn't really got any further. And they've, you know, this one with Netflix is only the newest one, but they've already done Disney. It didn't jump. Their market share didn't jump. They've done Roku. Their market share didn't jump because it's too hard to use. So whilst in theory, it's the right move, they need to fix that UX. Otherwise, planners aren't going to use it.
I'm interested to hear from you, given the agency. You're the agency person here.
I think it's easy. Time is money. So I think exactly to Bucky's point, it's like, time is money. Do we have time to kind of like spend hell of a lot of time trying to kind of find the right platform and everything? At the end of the day, I think what's really being forgotten by some of those big tech partners is that when we review a DSP, yes, we're reviewing a DSP based on their scale, of course, their benefits, and ultimately the publishers they've got available. Absolutely. But the third one, which I think is the biggest one they need to not forget, is actually ease of use. And yes, again, Amazon is unfortunately the one that kind of fails every single time, because yes, they get really amazing results, but not when you're trying to kind of set it up yourself. And it increases SLAs, it increases pain points. And again, we've got to kind of go fast in an industry that never sleeps. So as we want to always kind of be the best and fastest to market, it just doesn't fit. And I think one thing that they are also forgetting is now there is also a lot of brands that have actually internalized their marketing. So yes, they might be kind of going directly to Amazon, but they also have their own programmatic people internally. And I think, again, instead of investing into Netflix and Disney, personally, I would have spent the money into making their platform better, because I think that's where really the money would have come from. But
Let's go. Yes, that's exactly what I'm going to hear.
What's your consulting fee going to be, B, when they call you up and ask them to help you design it?
I love that.
I don't know. I'll think about it. But, you know, knowing they invested into Disney Plus and Netflix, I think I can go high. That's fine.
I think so. I think so too.
God, I love that. You are the right person to bring on today, B.
Wait, hang on. Like, we literally just agreed, but no one cared when I said it.
Yeah, but you're the wrong baby. Moving on, in network agency news. So it was reported over the summer that Dentsu might sell its international operations. Now, this is against the backdrop of Dentsu laying off about 8% of its global workforce earlier this year and its international revenues being down. But if they do end up selling, this is a big deal, obviously, for us in the industry and obviously the media folk that work at Dentsu. So we've talked a lot about the seismic shifts reshaping the ad industry over the last few months. But most of our conversation has focused on WPP and their shakeup. So this is a really good news story to discuss. And I want to know who you think's really in the running to actually snap up Dentsu. Do we think the publicist Pac-Man is ready to strike? And is there a reason to with Dentsu?
B says no comment.
Okay.
I think I could probably add a comment here. I don't think it would be Publicis because Arthur Sardoun said it's sort of explicitly. I'm going to get told off by B, aren't I?
You have to be very correct. Arthur Sardoun, there you go.
Sorry, Arthur. He specifically referenced this. He was doing a conference at the, I think it was Bank of America or Bank of France or whatever it was. And he emphasized that the Publicis' direction is about AI-powered marketing for the future and not so much as a consolidated for more of the same. So I think we can probably rule them out. I mean, that said, if Dentsu tanks further and that price drops a lot more, then you never know, because we know they've got deep pockets. But I think the front runner will be Havas. So we know that they've got quite a hungry acquisition strategy. I think they aim to sort of 5 or 10 acquisitions per year. They've already bought Uncommon in the UK this year. They bought a few digital agencies in APAC as well. And we know they want to expand globally. So they want to catch up with the big boys. If they did acquire Havas, it would put them firmly on that footing. I think they'd be about level with sort of Omnicom IPG. They'd be ahead of WPP in terms of billing. So probably the biggest chance. But let's not rule out something mad like Meta coming in and making a bid. Because we know they want to cut out the middleman as much as possible anyway, don't they? They're going straight for the client's wallets. Zuck said that himself. So we'll see.
I'm thinking it might be an opportunity for Amazon to get good people. There you go. If they could kind of have a programmatic team and kind of help.
There we go.
Do you know what? Yeah, I want to expand on that, because I feel like B and B are doing telepathy today, because this was my take. Okay, are we ready? Stay with me. So I think it could be a really interesting bid for retail media. Obviously, Amazon is the one that comes to mind because they're the biggest and they're the most global. But when I thought it all the way through, I think there's going to be so much a huge issue, I think, with antitrust and anti-competition, where they are so entwined in the whole ecosystem. So then I was like, who else could do this? I was thinking, just think of someone like a Walmart. Because retail media, everyone's like, retail media, it's on the rise, it's on the rise, it's on the rise. But it's so regionalized. There's nothing global about it. So I'm thinking someone like a Walmart in this parallel world buys Dentsu International, and suddenly they have media planners to allow them to kind of do top funnel stuff around everything. In the US, they continue to operate like Dentsu, but planning full funnel and bringing in the Walmart purchase data and everything that they've got, so you can really close the loop on your advertising. Whilst they're doing this, they're proving the concept. I'm like, cool, Walmart, go and now buy other small retail companies in other markets that your Dentsu operations are already in. Continue that process. Do that again. So you've done it in the US. Now you're going to, I don't know, let's not use the UK, but let's just say Tesco was a small retailer. You come to the UK, you buy Tesco, and then you take the Tesco media and then you add the Dentsu planning, and then we have full funnel again. So I'm like, this could be a really interesting way to create an entirely new model that has a completely closed loop from top to bottom. And then before you know it, they can't do any anti like distrust, because no one noticed you were doing it, and then you're going to be really big. So that's what I think might happen.
Wow. Okay, are you like a part of the acquisition team or something? Okay.
Inside information, that is.
You seem to have really thought about that.
I did, honestly. This is me. It was me waiting for my plane home yesterday in the airport. Like, what could we think about? So
this is being her new role as commercial director.
But yeah, don't get me wrong. There will be anti competition and antitrust, but I think it could be worth all of that. Mm. I think if you got enough pockets to do it, and Walmart should be able to do something like that. But yeah,
well, you heard it here first. Let's see where this story goes.
Nice.
Well,
do you guys
thanks.
Actually agree, though? What do you guys actually think about that?
Yeah, that sounds like a very interesting idea. A really interesting idea.
Like, everyone's like, far-fetched, plan. Shut up.
I would say far-fetched, but who am I to say that?
We're not the big dogs
smart,
yet.
To be honest. It would be a smart move.
Can you stay on the pod now? Can you stay, please?
No, but when you think about it, right? Yes, it's far-fetched, but it would be maybe not a Walmart, but maybe kind of like something that's already kind of maybe international or something like this, But you're very right in the fact that that does not exist apart from Amazon. They have the supremacy right now, yes, of course, based on what they do. But then there is so much more opportunity on retail media that have not yet been cracked. So I think that's an interesting one. Now, will it happen? I think that's where, I don't know. I wish I could read the future. But it's a very interesting take. And I think, like, it would be also making the industry more interesting than if it was kind of like being bought by another agency, in my personal opinion. But let's kind of see what the future, I mean, we should maybe have a bet. And then we'll see who wins in the end. Let's make it interesting.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I really like it along the side of, like, you know, everything's so global right now. And we're starting to see a lot of the global things have issues because all the countries have different issues. So this, in my mind, it's kind of like all of the individual markets would have a very, well, you know, it'd be a different retailer and then Dentsu and a different retailer. And so in my mind, I'm like, cool. So you have this kind of global footprint, but really local activation.
Yeah, well, you know, Bookie called it first, everyone.
Nice.
Very good, very good. Well, moving on, in the MarTech landscape, we'd like to talk to you about Alchemy Network. Alchemy is a unique innovation consultancy that's helping companies gain competitive advantage through marketing and advertising technology. They work with hundreds of brands and agencies globally and identify needs and interests that then save agency folks like us time and effort by curating the landscape. They can be used if you have a specific brief in mind or simply as a form of learning and development to keep your finger on the pulse of emerging trends. If you're interested, email hello@alchemy-network.co.uk to find out more. So that wraps up our news this week. Remember, you can respond and have your say in any of the topics and stories we discuss. Email us. It's info.tmfpod@gmail.com. That's info.tmfpod@gmail.com. Now, we have a much more exciting segment this week. It's our guest segment, and it features Bea from Publicis. Woo, 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 woo.
Thank you.
Bea, we're so happy to have you, and we want to ask you some key questions on some of the most prominent topics and conversations in the industry at the moment. And one big one is how brands can really connect with their consumers in ways that feel personal and relevant while still operating at scale. And this is really against a backdrop of agencies having to kind of navigate the evolving balance between long-term brand building and also short-term performance goals. So we're really interested to hear your perspective on, I suppose, how brands can exceed in this era of personalization. So are you ready to answer some questions on it?
I am. Go
okay.
For it.
Good. Very good. Well, question one, how do you think brands are really personalizing experience for consumers without actually losing efficiency or consistency at scale?
Oh, lovely, lovely.
Well,
easy
first
question
things
to
first.
Start.
I know. I didn't get the easy ones, but you know,
can
I'm
handle
not
it.
Shy from the challenge.
She can handle it.
First things first, I think it's like they need to kind of take a step back, because what I see kind of like a lot of brand kind of do is we want to kind of go head in into personalization, and they kind of go into that thing of like, I want to speak to X and I'll speak to Y, but they forget to kind of have a strategy, which I think like we're going to talk a lot in this. And the second thing is actually like be consumer centric. So I think there is some really kind of key marketing things that kind of get forgotten into the process. So my first thing is actually having some key guardrails, because yes, you kind of want to be personalized and people want that personalization. That is very true. We are all kind of like loving it when you get something that you really, really want and it makes the experience so much faster and ultimately you convert, which was what we want as a marketer. However, you also need to kind of not forget that you need brand reach and brand scale anyway, because if no one knows you, no one is going to want to kind of buy you anyway. And if you're not top of mind, you're never going to get there. So it's kind of like the entire question is, how do you actually bring the balance in between both, which is scale personalization, and ultimately you don't lose the efficiency behind it. So my key things and what I say to my clients is do not over-target, really kind of look at the segments and kind of really understand that. The second thing is really looking into using like personalization sparingly, don't forget, you shouldn't kind of personalize on the one S. That's not necessarily where it's going to make sense. You need to kind of really look at personalization when you kind of really are going bottom funnel. But again, it depends on your product and what you're doing and where your brand is at in terms of maturity. Secondly, be tactical. And that's really the main thing I think a lot of them kind of forgetting is like they get very excited about personalization and using AI and everything that AI can do. But they forget that layer of like being tactical and strategic about it. So I think for me, keep brand building strong. We really need to kind of make sure we are still reaching our campaigns to kind of like untouched opportunities that we have on the market. And also, don't forget to measure it, because if you don't measure it, you're never going to know if it works or not. So measure incrementality. Make sure that actually you are checking your CPMs. If your CPMs are inflating massively with no conversions, you're over-targeting. That's not right. Kind of bring it back. So I think a lot of things is A, test, but B, go with it with a strategy. Don't go for the one person. Remember that, you know, you also need scale for the algorithm to kind of work. So really think about that and test in key areas and kind of like get your learnings and kind of move forward with this. It's not an easy answer.
Yeah, wow.
That's a bar. You know, when you said if your CPMs are inflating and you're not getting conversions, you're over-targeting. Write that down. Everybody write that down. Yeah, literally. Wow. Yep.
Yeah, mic drop. Mic drop moment, B. Now, well, you've obviously kind of referenced strategy there when you've talked about how you can do things at scale. And what strategy specifically do you see as most critical for personalization across multiple markets?
First things first, again, get back to consumer-centric. Do not assume everyone wants the same thing. So when you kind of want personalization, you need to kind of understand what your consumer wants to be seen personalized. But then based on this, you also kind of need to better understand what are the local nuances. Because what's right in France is not necessarily right in the UK, as we all know. And if we want to kind of make it further, what's right in the UK is not necessarily right in Asia. So you need to kind of really understand your audience, really kind of like nail it down to those USPs. But also, I think, understand your brand challenges in all of the different geographies as well, because they are not going to be the same. So again, you're not going to be having the same level of potentially like awareness consideration. And depending on that, I would also kind of question, do you need to kind of do personalization everywhere? So again, understand your brand, understand your consumers, understand what you're trying to kind of convey and what you're trying to kind of do. But that brings it all back to strategy and really understanding your consumer is actually the key for everything that you're going to have. And then having the right messaging is again the same thing. But again, localize, don't globalize necessarily, because if you want to kind of personalize, you need to kind of show you understand your audience at a local level as well. So that would be my key advice.
Love it. Love it. Nailed it once again. Thank you, Bea. Now, thinking about it, AI-driven solutions really have transformed how brands approach personalization. But I want to hear from you as to how this is shaping the way they're balancing long-term brand building with short-term performance strategies. Do you have a point of view on that?
100%. I think, you know, AI is a shiny tool. Everyone wants to use it for everything and nothing at the same time. Again, think about what it is meant to kind of be doing and why you want to kind of use it for. What are the learnings that you kind of want? So I see like AI-driven solutions are amazing to also understand the wider elements in terms of like bring in your MMM, bring in like some of your data that you've got so you can actually like do some predictive and kind of forecasting data understanding. So that's one way to kind of use it for the wider kind of brand scale. Yes, you can also kind of using for performance-led and personalization. But again, don't bet everything on it. There is still an element of understanding what you're trying to kind of do. And again, AI is a tool. It's not necessarily the ends meet all. Like it, we still are testing it to kind of better understand what is right, what isn't. So you still need like good people behind it, good strategies to kind of understand where to go. So I think, again, for me, it's kind of keeping that balance between where you're using it, where you're using it for, and being very clear into what you're learning. So as long as you have that, I think you can have a really strong strategy, but just continue to kind of test and learn, basically.
Love it. So if you're going to use AI, use B as well for the human element. Very good.
Human touch.
Yeah. Well, great. And then lastly, in your view, what does success look like for a brand operating at scale in 2025 and beyond?
For me, winning brand will be actually mastering a balance of mass reach, which we know we kind of all need, as well as kind of making sure that they have personalized, but at the right level. So I think it's all about efficiency. It's all about kind of bringing consistency, locally relevant kind of usage of like technology as well. That's also very important. Making sure you're kind of like customer centric, but also bring the emotional elements. So again, kind of think about your what you're trying to kind of do, where you're trying to kind of do it, and whom you're trying to kind of speak to, because I think so many brands are kind of missing the point as well on this one, the messaging. And lastly, I think AI is an amazing enabler, but it is not a substitute for a strategy. So as long as brands remember that, I think like they can just win next year and they continue to kind of grow and be a success as well.
I've got to say, I'm actually honestly blown away. I could not agree more with anything that just came out of your mouth. That was sensational.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, babe.
Like, all of a sudden, I'm literally like, I see why publicists be winning everything.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, amazing. Well, thank you so much, B, for that very informative burst of insight, I suppose. Mm. And that wraps up this week. So huge thanks for listening to the Media Freak podcast. If you like listening to our Freak this week, remember to like, subscribe and tell all your friends. And B, thank you so much again. You've been fantastic and publicists are so lucky to have you.
thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
Thanks again to Alchemy Network as our long-term commercial partner. And we'll see you next time. Bye.